Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Career, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, on a wonderful Friday afternoon. Happy Good Friday to you. All right, great show planned today. Urban Meyer, three-time national champ, our college football analyst right here at Fox. Urban Meyer is going to join us. So will Dante Fowler, the new defensive end for the Atlanta Falcons. We're going to start today, though, with the NBA and a report by The Athletic that Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, the two stars of the Utah Jazz, are not getting along. And it's all because of the coronavirus, with some people with these stories suggesting that the relationship may not be salvageable. Donovan Mitchell blaming Rudy Gobert for him contracting the coronavirus. ESPN authored a report today that says not only is Gobert and Donovan Mitchell on the outs and not communicating, Gobert not communicating with the Jazz either, or virtually no communication with the Jazz either. This situation looks bleak. I'm not sure if I'm buying that this is all driven by the coronavirus as it relates to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. Marcellus, do you have a problem if Donovan Mitchell seems so upset about Rudy Gobert allegedly giving him the coronavirus that the relationship isn't salvageable? Does that make sense to you?
I don't have a problem from D. Mitchell's perspective in terms of if he felt that Rudy Gobert, because he was acting callous and because he was acting foolish and being irresponsible in that moment, gave him the coronavirus. I understand where D. Mitch is coming from, but there are three sides to every story, and I'm glad that you started to suggest that there's more to this story than just the contraction of the coronavirus. So I'd rather spend my time talking about Rudy Gobert's side and his perspective. One, if you're Rudy Gobert, obviously you got caught up in the wash and the transition of how this coronavirus is now and how we're responding to it and how it was before the NBA canceled games. Go back to that Monday before that Wednesday canceled game. It was a different world. It wasn't our normal pre-coronavirus norm, but it certainly wasn't this. And I feel for Rudy Gobert that much in that moment of transition, not taking it to heart like some did, but not all did. But also, if you look at it, this is a real one. And I think some of the Utah Jazz officials are saying this. Hey, Donovan, kind of calm down. You don't know if you were asymptomatic and gave Rudy Gobert the virus and he showed symptoms first. You don't know how this transaction and contraction occurred. So let's not totally indict Rudy Gobert. But like you're suggesting as well, there's more to the story. This is the easy, convenient way and low-hanging fruit if you really have an other issue with Rudy Gobert and a way to get out of Utah.
Well, absolutely. And Donovan Mitchell is from New York. I think this is about wanting out of Utah, in my opinion. But we're going to bring in a real expert on this, Jim Jackson, because, Marcellus, this whole situation reminds me of 1996 when Tony Braxton, Jim Jackson, and Jason Kidd all came down with the flu at the same time. So we have no better expert.
Man, you ain't right.
Then Jim,
I love it.
Jim, your thoughts on Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert.
First of all, my thoughts are this. because you wanted to ask me that, the technical difficulties of not having me on is why you didn't want me. You want me on the phone instead of see my reaction so I can respond accordingly to what you going to say. You know, now you hate right, on me. Right. Now the technical difficulties are not there. So, yes, I've been through it before. But and you know what? What is interesting about this is that I knew during the course of the year, even late last year, Gobert was unhappy at times with his role, okay, in regards to getting touches. How that feeds into this whole dynamic with Donovan Mitchell, we really don't know. I always say, let's be careful about what we hear to what we know. Back to the Tony Braxton thing, I told people, and I tell people all the time, the breakup in Dallas had nothing to do with Tony Braxton. I never met Tony Braxton, but yet, if you let the newspapers and the people on the outside tell the story, then that's what you're going to believe. Now, keep in mind, Rudy Gobert is 28 years old, 6 years in the league, a little bit more mature. Donovan Mitchell is only his second year, 24 years old. So he's still immature in regards to how he handles some of these things. And since the beginning, even when Robin Roberts asked specifically Donovan how the relationship was going early on, or have you talked to Rudy, he skirted the question. So we're still dealing with a little bit of an immaturity aspect, which is okay, from a young man that is still trying to figure out his way through the NBA and growing as a young man. Unfortunately, what happens, you have two superstars, opposite end of the spectrum, not talking to each other. One is not talking to the organization, and that's a cause for concern moving forward. Can you be professional enough? The question is, when both of these young men come back, be professional enough to do your job without splintering the team? Because that's the ultimate question. And we won't know that until they get back in the building face-to-face and understand that their job as a profession is to play basketball and do it to the best of their abilities. But I'm hoping that reading the tea leaves, a lot of this is a little bit more blown out of proportion. I'm hoping that those two young men can salvage whatever relationship they had before and get back on the court, because I think they're a dynamic duo for years to come here in the NBA.
Jim, what's your reaction to my thought that perhaps Donovan Mitchell just wants out of Utah? It's a unique NBA environment. A lot of international players, and of course, Utah is nothing like New York City.
Well, I mean, if Donovan wants to get out, he has next year after when his option comes up and his agents can push to where he wants to go. But keep in mind, in today's world, Donovan Mitchell can still be a star in Utah. It's not going to be the same as if you were in New York, Chicago, L.A., you know, Atlanta. I mean, well, Chicago, something like that, or Boston. But he's in control. This is his team. See, a lot of times, you know, we look at it, and I think that's a point well taken from your side when you're looking at it. Does Donovan really want to get out? I haven't heard that. This is his team, basically. He can do pretty much what he wants to do in Utah. You know, the conversations with him as being, you know, that next all-star, that continual all-star, be a superstar on the court and off the court. Can he do that in Utah? I think he can in today's world. Now, he's not going to get the same publicity that, you know, a lot of guys get. You can just point to Damian Lillard and what he's doing there in Portland. He's still kind of overshadowed by the bigger markets. I hope that is not the case because, again, if you lose a Donovan Mitchell in Utah, now you're losing a storyline in the Western Conference of a young team that we look towards the future, and I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, it's interesting. This certainly can align itself to a guy who's laying breadcrumbs down so that when that moment occurs, he signed a four-year deal. He's on his third year of that four-year contract. If he wants to exit Utah, which I think a lot of NBA players don't necessarily look at Utah as a destination, this will certainly give him ammunition for that move. So he's a guy who's from New York, but also spends a ton of time in California in the offseason. Maybe he's just one of those guys that needs that big market, fascinated. He's from it. He spends his time there. And then you go to Utah. And I can relate to that playing in Buffalo. I'm from L.A. I went to school in New York. And then I land in Buffalo. And to protect some of the players that were there, they, to a man, would tell me, man, as soon as you can get out of Buffalo, get out of Buffalo, because not only lifestyle, but opportunity. So Donovan Mitchell is really versed in terms of off-the-field opportunities, but probably limited being in Utah. This was low-hanging fruit. Why not throw it out there that I'm not happy and see how it plays out going forward?
Well, yeah, let me say
all right, guys, we got to move on. Okay. I'm sorry, Jim, we got to move on. Urban Meyer is going to join us next. Jim, I do want you to answer this one question, just yes or no. Don't be long-winded. Can you deny that you, Jason Kidd, and Tony Braxton all had the flu at the same time in 96?
Yeah, I can deny it.
All right, we got to go. He's not going to.
Say me quick.
All right.
Hey, what's quick?
Urban Meyer, we're going to pull up in his crib. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, time now to pull up in Sarasota, Florida, with one of the greatest coaches in college football history, Fox Sports college football broadcaster, three-time national champion, Urban Meyer. Urban, welcome to the show. Let's get right to it. You're living in quarantine like the rest of us. Time for great reflection. Have you learned anything about yourself sitting at home with your family?
I learned that I really have a hard time growing a beard of any substance. I also realize how much I miss being around people. You know, I'm usually a pretty quiet guy into myself, but, you know, when you get locked up like this, and it makes you realize how much you miss the people you work with, and you wish everybody the best.
All right, I'm going to put you to work here, take you back to your coaching days. What advice would you be giving your kids right now with this very unique offseason, a lot less supervision of them by the coaching staff? What would you be telling your kids right now?
This is the ultimate test of culture, an ultimate test of leadership. And, you know, there's going to be someone come out of this difficult situation. Some team is going to be exceptional, and that's going to be that with a great culture and that with great leaders, because they're on their own. And, you know, I've been talking to the Ohio State strength coach and Coach Day as well. You know, just little things like nutrition and keeping your body weight up and getting to sleep on time, all the things that you take for granted when you have a hold of them on campus, that's all gone. And so some team, mark my words, Jason, some team will come out of this thing very, very strong, because they must have an incredible culture and an incredible group of leaders, because they'll have an edge on everybody else.
Now, Coach, you're over here with us on the good side, being an analyst, a little different pressure cooker versus your great coaching career. But is retirement life for you harder or easier than you expected?
Easier. You know, I think, you know, knowing that Ohio State's in great hands, it's been much easier. I miss certain things. I miss it dearly, but, you know, and I think Fox has been a big part of that. I love my team at Fox, and I can't wait to get back with those guys, with Reggie and Matt and Brady Quinn and Rob Stone. So I've learned this new life. I appreciate this new life. I appreciate time. I appreciate family, all things that were kind of hard to find those kind of times.
Now, your name is always going to be out there in terms of coaching opportunities, even at the NFL level. There were talks this offseason of you potentially being the Cowboys coach. Any truth to those rumors, and were you interested?
Now, if you remember, that all started when Colin asked me a question about the coach at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, and asked me about the job. And I think, you know, I made comments like the New York Yankees. It's an iconic brand. It's America's team. They happened to be loaded with athletes, and he kind of caught me off guard, but there was nothing real to that, no substance. I was never contacted, but I just have great respect, you know, like any football coach of the Dallas would have of the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, listen, Urban, I'm a huge critic of the sports media, despite being a member of the sports media. I love the media. I love my career in it, but we do a lot of things that I just disagree with.
I thought the media mishandled the Zach Smith story unfair, primarily to you and your family, but also a little unfair to Zach. And so as a former coach who now works in the media, is there any advice, may not be the exact word I'm looking for, but any words of wisdom or thoughts or perspective you'd like to see the media have when they're dealing with these very complex stories and there's so much bait to sensationalize them and demonize people? Any advice you would give to the media?
Oh, boy. That was a very tough situation for everybody involved. Obviously, mistakes were made. I made some mistakes, but it was all in trying to do the right thing. And our administration, Gene Smith, myself, the Title IX liaison, all the people, we relied solely on the police investigation, police reports, and what they told us. We're not investigators. So you asked a question about advice. I would say that, you know, don't, you know, report the truth, report not narrative, report facts. And I think facts are always critical. And remember, your football coaches, ADs, you're not investigators. That's not our job. That's not the job. You know, doing the right thing. And we try to do the right thing. I don't speak on behalf of everybody, but you try to do the right thing. So advice is, you know, that was a tough situation. And I'm not sure I'm one to give advice on that kind of situation. But I just think the capital F facts, and that's what needs to be reported.
All right, success at Bowling Green, success at Utah, success at Florida, success at Ohio State. I don't want to hear about your favorite team. I want to know, which team do you think you did your best work at? Because to me, like Ohio State, that kind of recruits yourself. The Bosa brothers, Chase Young. To me, what you did at Bowling Green, I played in the MAC, was amazing. What was Urban Meyer's best work as a head coach?
Well, they recruit themselves, Jason. You have to work really. You have to beat Alabama, Clemson, guys like that. So Ryan's doing a great job with that, Coach Days. I would say the most fun I had was Utah. If you think that was the spread offense when it was really no one was running it. And we were doing things, Dan Mullen, myself, or he was on my staff there. We were doing things offensively that let's try it. You know, we're not in the public eye as much. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. You know, you took over a program, let's try it. But I'd have to say, as you were talking, the 2012 Ohio State just came off a 7-loss season. You took over for Iconic, a great coach, a good friend, Jim Tressel and Luke Fickell, and to have that team go 12-0. When the players at the end of the day were not allowed to go to a bowl game, I sometimes, and I still stay in touch with so many of those players. You talk about one of the most selfless acts, especially those kids could have all left. And without any punishment, because once you're on probation, you can leave. And they stayed, and not only stayed, we had two overtime wins and had some struggles injury-wise, but found a way to go 12-0, and that's obviously very hard.
Now, Urban, you coach one of the greatest college football players ever and one of my favorite people in the world, Tim Tebow. What did you think of his NFL career, and what were your expectations of his NFL career?
Well, I'm so biased about him. I love him. We went to his wedding in South Africa, and Demi, his beautiful wife, were great friends. He actually flew all the way back to come to my daughter's wedding. That's how close we are. And so I thought he'd go win a Super Bowl. I really did. And the game, you know, when he had that run for the Broncos and then beat the Steelers, I thought, here we go, man. And the NFL game is tough. The NFL game is different. And it didn't turn out that way, but I had high expectations going into it, and unfortunately it didn't happen.
What were you thinking when Tim became so polarizing, then why?
Wow. He was in 2000, you know, he's one of the top recruits come out of high school. I remember it well, obviously. And then 2006, we won the national title, and he's the golden child. 2007, he wins the Heisman. 2008, we won the national championship. And then I remember the pressure and the intense scrutiny that was the first time I really witnessed that, not only on myself, but also on an athlete. And, you know, Tim's a Superman. He's a competitive guy, and I felt it. I saw it. I felt it on the team. And I think his lifestyle, the fact that he's a strong Christian and he's there's no hypocrisy whatsoever. He is what he is, and he's open about it. And he's very, he wears his feelings on his sleeve. You know, that time he gave the speech after that tough loss in 08, you know, you wish you had, at the time, I was like, man, I wish he wouldn't have done that. And he did. And as a result, I knew that had a big impact on our team. So what makes him so polarizing, he's a person that we all look up to, that we all want to be like. At times, sometimes I guess that attracts people, but it also creates some negativity at times, which I be honest, I don't understand that.
And let's talk about two other quarterbacks, Joe Burrow and Tua, that are coming out this year. Put your analyst evaluator hat on. Which one you think is the better NFL prospect?
Yeah, I play these guys a lot. I love them both. I love who they are as people, which is really, really important in this process, which we can talk about how to acquire talent. Joe had arguably the best season in history as a quarterback. Tua's had a couple excellent, but they also played for elite teams. I'd have to go with Joe right now. I just think his durability, I think that's going to come into question with Tua. I don't know the extent of his injury, but I've heard that from many people, and I've actually been on many phone calls with teams that are asking him. You know, I don't know him, obviously, but I've watched all the film. I think both of them are going to be exceptional in the NFL. But here's the thing, Marcellus, keep this in mind, that great quarterbacks, the one common denominator is with a great team. There's been a lot of great quarterbacks disappear because they get stuck in a bad place. And I you know, that's the biggest thing I want to see. I want to see both those quarterbacks get with a really good organization around good players and a chance to go grow up as an NFL player, because obviously they're going to have to adapt to a game that's much faster.
Urban, I got to follow up that comment, because Joe Burrow made some comments about wanting to play for a great team that's committed to winning, that's going to maximize his potential. The Cincinnati Bengals, an organization you probably know relatively well, have the first pick in the draft. They haven't had a lot of success. I don't think they've won a playoff game in more than 20 years, haven't been to a Super Bowl since 1988. If you were Joe Burrow and advising him, would you be concerned about being drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals?
The Bengals had a nice run when Marv Lewis, they just didn't win the darn playoff games. And Marv Lewis is a great friend of mine, I think a great coach. You couldn't take that next step. But going to playoffs every year like he did. So the Bengals can do it. It's a great city. It's actually my hometown. And so I have actually talked to Joe. And I think he needs to ask a lot of hard questions. You have to win. At the end of the day, Joe Burrow has to win. And Joe Burrow cannot do it by himself. So he has to. You know, I don't like to use the word demand, but he's carrying all the cards right now, and he needs to go. Can you win at Cincinnati? You absolutely can win at Cincinnati. They've been not very good lately, but you know, I don't know the staff there very well. I think obviously they're quality coaches, or they wouldn't be there. But he's got to ask those hard questions, and he has every right to ask the questions and get the answer, because he's. You know, you go play quarterback on a team that's not very good. All of a sudden, you're a bad quarterback. That's not true. I when Alex Smith went to the 49ers, and people said that he was a bad quarterback, I could not believe what I was hearing. Alex Smith is not a bad. He's a great quarterback. He just got stuck in a really bad organization at the time.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you've had conversations with Joe about how to deal with the Cincinnati Bengals and maybe ask some of these tough questions.
But you know, that's his father and his inner circle. And I can't say on that. I'm a friend of Joe's and I love him. I'm so proud of him. And I want to see like all of our players. I get so intrigued by, and it's the first time I've had time, Jason, this year, is I called a good many of our players in the NFL because I was intrigued by the NFL. I wanted to know why, you know, why in the world is, you know, are some teams just aren't winning? And I was actually asked those questions by some people, and I wanted to at least give an educated answer. And I asked about the culture, about team meetings, about expectations, about accountability, all the things that the elite NFL franchises have and others don't. And so I probably talked to 30 of my former athletes, and I took notes. I wanted to find out about tell me why they lose. Because the fan says, the fan or the media would say it's a bad player. There's no bad players in the NFL. There is zero bad players in the National Football League. I think there's zero bad coaches. Now, I think there's some really bad organizations or bad situations that are struggling at this time. But just to say that's a bad quarterback, a bad receiver, bad lineman, they're the best of the best in college. They're not bad players. But there's something wrong there. And I got a little bit of an idea after conversation I've had with those players.
Now, Coach, a ton of attention has been given to these top quarterbacks in the draft, but the D lineman out there by the name of Chase Young from your former school that seems like a can't-miss prospect, would you take Chase Young over one of these quarterbacks?
I've had a couple of those conversations, and he'd be one you'd think about. You know, I think Joe Burrow is a friend, you know, is one of those lightning in the ball of the years, and I think he'll probably go number one. But Chase, when you compare him to Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, two players that are dominant in the NFL right now, and I was obviously around those guys. Chase is probably a little more gifted, if that's even hard to fathom. You know, he didn't have the first 2 years weren't quite as dominant. He had the high ankle sprain his second year. His third year is the most dominant player in college football. But, boy, what I think about it, I just don't know. You know, you have to ask the rosters what quarterback, because you can't win without a quarterback. You can win without the best defensive end. You cannot win without an excellent quarterback. So I'd have to look at the roster, but I would certainly consider it.
Urban, I want to circle back to the comments you just said before that one. And you were talking about the difference between teams that win and teams that don't in the NFL. I read an interview and you were saying that a lot of teams don't ask you questions, don't ask the strength coach, don't even talk to Ryan Day, but they may select an Ohio State player. I think some of that comes down to concern that a coach won't be honest with a team for recruiting purposes. If you tell the truth about a kid, it may hurt you in recruiting down the road. How do you balance celebrating your players that have helped you win games with being honest with an NFL team about whether that kid is right for their team?
Question, and that's real. And we fall into that in high school recruiting as well, but that's where the word relationship is so important, where if you have a great relationship with that head coach, the NFL head coach, you can trust each other, and you can, like I do many of the NFL coaches, and I'll sit down and talk with them. And as I told people in that article that you might have saw or some interview, is that the questions aren't about whether he's 6'2" or 6'3" or he runs a 4.6. It's about his toughness, about how he manages, you know, relationships off the field. What's his social life? What's he like on fourth down? What's he like in the biggest games in the locker room? Those are only questions only a coach knows. So when I hear that, I think that's real, Jason, but I think they're getting their information from somewhere. And that was my question this offseason. My question is, where are you getting information on people that you're going to pay upwards of $10 million to if you're not talking and you can't trust the head coach? And the chance of you making an error is very high. Once again, I don't know where you're getting the information. Is it the agent? Is it analytics? Is it the combine? If that's where you're getting information, there's a great chance there's going to be some untruths or some errors made.
Now, Coach, you expressed some concerns when Dwayne Haskins was leaving in terms of his maturity, landing in Washington, not necessarily hitting the ground running just yet, but now he has a new coaching staff in Washington. What are your expectations of Dwayne?
I got to spend time with Coach Rivera, and I really didn't know him before, but boy, I really like him and his general manager and spend time with him. They asked a lot of questions about Dwayne. My concerns about Dwayne wasn't so much maturity as the fact of lack of experience. You know, you have the best year, he had the best quarterback year in the history of Ohio State. One of the best years in college football history for a quarterback. However, it was 1 year. And to think he's ready to go lead a franchise immediately, you know, the NFL is such a different game, such a fast game. It's everybody's all-star and learning a new system. And, you know, so my concerns were only that lack of experience. I think he's going to be fine if they stick with him. And once again, what's the common denominator is, will they surround him with excellent players? If they surround him with excellent players, he'll be a great quarterback. If they don't, he won't.
Urban, before we let you go, I got to tap into your coaching leadership one more time. Sports fans, a little depressed. A lot of America, a little depressed. Could you give us a little pep talk? Tell sports fans we're going to be all right eventually after this quarantine is lifted.
Absolutely. And I love this country. I love the people that lead this country. I love the professionals that are, I watch them every night and talk to us and explain to us what's going on. I think information is in the open. Just realize every day you wake up, you be very blessed. Grab a knee and say a prayer and say thank you that you live in the greatest country in the world, in the history of the world. And leave it to the professionals, trust the professionals, and do what they ask you to do. We'll rebound stronger. America has always rebounded stronger. You think of some of the tragedies that just occurred in our short lifetimes. You know, 9/11, what happened? We came back stronger than ever, more united than ever. And I'm more convinced now that, you know, we've all had time to reflect, watch, and how proud we should be of living in this great country and support this great country, support each other. But remember that we'll come out of this thing even stronger. That's a problem. That's a guarantee in this great country we live in.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it. All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. TJ Houshmandzadeh is going to join us very shortly. We're going to talk about Terry Bradshaw and some interesting comments he had about Tom Brady. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, we got to keep it moving. Bring in TJ Houshmandzadeh. Get out to his crib. TJ, we got a great topic for you. Terry Bradshaw, four-time Super Bowl winner, of course, one of the greatest football broadcasters ever, had some interesting comments about Tom Brady, saying, look, he doesn't consider Tom Brady the GOAT. He thinks that Roger Staubach, Dan Marino, Joe Montana, and someone else I'm forgetting, all better and more talented than Tom Brady, just not blessed to be in the same situation as Tom Brady. Dan Fouts was the other guy that he listed. Marcellus, does Terry Bradshaw have a point here?
He does, because he qualified it by saying talent. So once you throw in that qualifier of talent, then you open up other quarterbacks, because they obviously can't compete in terms of accolade with Tom Brady. So when you start to mention talent, you look at the older eras, the days of yesterday, and those guys played against a lesser pool of athletes, even though they were tremendous and there were guys who stood out. In general, that's a lesser athlete than what Tom Brady is competing against. So whatever you see of Tom Brady and rate him in terms of talent, you have to bump that up based on what the eras were looking like in terms of talent before. Tom Brady, for me, deserves to be the GOAT, not only in accolade, but putting it all together and working it together. Yeah, there are other guys who threw it better, threw it across the yard, threw it harder, whatever you want to say, but no one put the entire package together like Tom Brady, so I have to disagree, Terry.
He has a point. The point is well taken, but I've said this 1,000 times. Where you get drafted to, it matters, and it helps in determining whether you're going to be a good player, a great player, an all-time great player like Tom Brady is. There's players in every sport. Marcellus, I've seen players that were super talented get cut because mentally they couldn't put it all together. So having that mental strength and that mental capacity to be able to perform at a high level, that's the talent within itself.
Marcellus has blown me away, because Marcellus, I need you to qualify. When was it less talented in the NFL? Now, I certainly believe perhaps in the 1960s, maybe early 70s. But since then, when Earl Campbell and these guys were playing, when Roger Staubach was playing, there was a lot of talent in the NFL. I mean, give these old dudes some credit, man.
It's all relative. You can say it's a lot of talent in the 70s compared to the 60s, but it's not a lot of talent in the 70s compared to now. Like, think about it. How many guys you think on the D-line in the 70s ran under 4 or 5? You might get 5.
Zero.
And I don't even think you got 5. Zero, right?
Zero.
Now you look at it, And you look at it now, it's commonplace. This dude's in high school right now, like, all right, I'm coming. They had old linemen in the low 200s. Now you can't even step on the field if you can't move at 300. I'm just talking in a perspective. Let me help you understand and crystallize this. Look at the NBA in the 80s. Them dudes are like looking like Rock'em Sock'em robots compared to these cats now. The ninth man on the team right now will go in the 80s NBA and get buckets.
No.
And if you don't believe that,
no.
Yeah, if you don't believe that, fast forward in 20, 30 years, watch how this era is going to look too.
I agree with that. Stop it, TJ.
You agree, TJ?
We're out of time.
Guys are better.
Larry Bird and Magic Johnson both would smack the hell out of both of y'all for even having this conversation. And I don't want to get smacked, so we're going to commercial break. Dante Fowler.
Good luck getting that shot off.
New Atlanta Falcons defensive end. He's going to join us next. Dante Fowler from the crib. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. More after this. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. We're about to pull up in Miami, Florida, at Dante Fowler's crib. Dante Fowler, the newest member of the Atlanta Falcons, the newest multi-millionaire in the NFL. Dante, welcome to the show. Let's first ask about your quarantine routine. What have you done? What's the best thing you've done to break up the boredom of the quarantine?
Well, I have my two boys at home. Well, first, I want to tell you guys, thank you for having me, first of all. Every day I wake up with my boys and we eat breakfast and we go outside, run around, have fun, play around and stuff like that. But usually I just go and have fun with them. When I put them down for rest, I eat lunch. And then after that, when they wake up, I go out and work out. And basically, they just, run the hoops with me, do ladder drills, do sprints and stuff with me. And that's all you can really do during these quarantine days. So, I mean, I have a nice backyard outside, so it's really good to move around and stuff like that. I have a lot of space.
Now, Dante, congratulations once again on the mega deal, but spend some of that money on your prepaid phone. I don't know what's going on with this. This fog and haze you got going on.
Nah,
$5 on the phone bill, man. Put some money down.
It's my baby. He dropped my phone, so it's cracked in the front. I'm so sorry.
Nah, it's all good, man. Just joking. I got four kids. I know the problems, bro. But we have something in common that I didn't know. A tradition in Florida that started around a Chucky doll. Now, you were in Florida in 2011, 2013, that world.
Yeah.
Right. I was with a Chucky doll in 1997. And when I saw you guys had that tradition with the Chucky doll, take me through how you guys came about finding this.
Man, that's crazy. Dominic Beasley, he started it. Yeah, that's crazy. Y'all did that as soon as when the movie came out. That's crazy. With Dominic Easley. He started it out first, and when he left, he just gave me the Chucky doll. I always wanted, he always said I was his little prodigy and stuff like that. And I looked up to him. That was my mentor when I was at UF. And when he left, he gave it to me, and I just, took, pride of it, and took tradition that of it, because of my play. It kind of describes Chucky a little bit, just violent and things like that. So, I just pass it on down to the players at UF as well. And it's probably still going on. So that's pretty cool. I didn't know you did that.
Oh, I would get so hyped. All you got to do is shake little Chuck. So hyped. You got me hyped right now. Go on, Whitlock. Get me out of here. What?
Oh, my gosh.
I love that dude.
All right, big move. You made a big move to Atlanta this offseason. Big new contract. You've stated you want to break Michael Strahan's sack record. Man, that's a lot of pressure. Are you ready for the increased expectations that come along with that contract and wanting to break Strahan's record?
Well, first, I just want to put it out. Like I said, that's the goal. They asked me, you know, how many sacks do I want? I said, well, I don't have a number, but the goal is to always, you know, beat Michael Strahan's record, which is 22 and a half sacks. And it takes a lot of work to do that. But I never said that I'm going to get it 22 and a half sacks this year. But I'm definitely going to get, you know, double-digit sacks and do everything that I have to do, you know, to get to the quarterback. And first off, I just want to thank, you know, Mr. Dimitroff, the owner, and also, you know, the president of the Atlanta Falcons for just giving me this opportunity and, you know, believing in me to be that guy, you know, to go and, you know, help this team, help the defense, to help the franchise, you know, be where they want to be, and that's to get to Super Bowls and, you know, be in playoffs and be a winning team. So I just want to appreciate them for just giving me this opportunity. And I know, you know, the expectations are super high, and that's something that I, you know, I'm ready for, you know, throughout my career, you know, the things that I've been through, the things that I learned, you know, the growing pains that I went through, and also the players that I've been playing with, that, and Calais Campbell, you know, Aaron Donald, you know, a lot of good guys that, you know, I had the opportunity to play with and grow with, and, you know, see how they carried themselves and the reason why they're all pros and, you know, have the accolades that they have. And I think, you know, right now is the right time and the right opportunity for me to show, you know, the Atlanta Falcons and everybody else, you know, the guy that I was brought in the league to be.
Now, Dante, you had 11 and a half sacks last year, so you and Chucky were working last year. Why did things come together like they did for you last year?
I think it was because of, you know, just the opportunities that I had, you know, the more reps that I had on the field. You know, that was my first year being a full-time starter and playing, you know, the amount of reps that I had played that season, and, you know, also playing with Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Clay Matthews and Sampson, you know, a dominant front seven, and a really good coach and Coach Wade Phillips. He just turned me loose and, you know, let me be the guy that I wanted to be. And, you know, it showed this season. And I think it's just the beginning. I actually look at this as like my freshman campaign. You know, it's my first year really getting out there. I think, you know, my body compared to a guy that's, you know, 6 years in the league, you know, it's way more fresher than, you know, the guy that's been, you know, starting for 6 years in the league straight. So I feel like I have a lot of advantages coming into this season with just, you know, the amount of reps that I played with, you know, and my growth as well, you know, being a player on the field.
Dante, you referenced playing alongside Aaron Donald. Marcellus referenced, you have, it comes together for you this year. It leads to the question, were you a little, the Rams wanted to retain you, wanted to keep you. Why leave LA? Why leave Aaron Donald?
I would never leave Aaron Donald if I didn't have to, but you know, it's a business, and I understand the business. And it's just something that I had to do, an opportunity that I couldn't, you know, take up. We were in the talks, me and the Rams, and we was trying to work something out. But, you know, this came, and it was an opportunity that I had, you know, the opportunity that I just been waiting for and, you know, been dreaming about, you know, since it got taken from you. So now that I have it again, I couldn't wait. And it was the right opportunity. I feel like it was the right city to be around the right culture and the right coaches with the Atlanta Falcons. And I just had to take it.
Hey, very quickly, we're out of time here, but Dan Quinn, I would imagine, played a big part in that. He was part of the college coaching staff in Florida when you were there. You guys were really close. You had Thanksgiving dinner with him. The whole, was that a big part of the reason?
Yeah, definitely a big part. I remember we was talking, you know, when I was coming into the draft, and it was, you know, the eighth pick, and I ended up getting drafted number three, and I felt like I wasn't going to go no farther than eight. So just to have this opportunity to be with him, he knows the guy that I am. He knows my family. He knows what type of family I come from. This guy, I mean, this coach, you know, he's came to my house, you know, when I was a child in high school. So, you know, me with him, I know I can't let him down. I'm holding to a certain standard with him. He taught me a lot of things, and it's a perfect fit for me.
Thank you, Dante. Good luck in Atlanta. Think you're going to
thank
piss
you guys
the
for
LA
having me.
I'm sure.
You guys are the best, man, for sure, man.
All right.
Marcellus, you the best, man.
Appreciate it. Stay around. Right. Uncle Jimmy's going to be here. We're having an approval rating on Donovan Mitchell. All right, speak for yourself. From the crib, more after this. All right, to speak for yourself from the crib, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Friday to everyone. All right, let's go out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. So we can talk about our approval rating for Donovan Mitchell. Donovan upset with Rudy Gobert about the coronavirus. Uncle Jimmy, you have any thoughts on Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, their relationship perhaps unsalvageable?
Look here, man, I'm going to tell y'all what. Y'all can sit up here and act all politically erect if y'all want to, man. Uncle Jimmy ain't got to do it. I'm going to keep it real. Okay? Donovan Mitchell got every right in the world to be mad at Rudy Gobert. You understand me? Rudy Gobert is a grown-ass man. What the hell he doing kissing and licking on a microphone like it's a red, white, and blue bomb pop on a hot, sunny day? If the man want to twist fate, he ain't got to get everybody else all mixed up in his business. Rudy Gobert went in the locker room and said Candyman 3 times and said, look, didn't nothing happen. Candyman got through and killed everybody in the NBA season. Because of Rudy
Gobert. Candyman.
We'll be back on Monday, hopefully.
Candyman.
Stephen Colbert.